Welcome to The Waggle, presented by Sport Clips, the official podcast of the Canadian Football League.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to The Waggle podcast, brought to you by Sport Clips, brought to you by us here at CFL.ca. I'm Donovan Bennett. I am with the draft guru himself. Davis Sanchez was looking nice, clean, and proper on the desk with TSN, breaking down and evaluating all of the draft picks. And we are going to do a deeper dive into what he thought about the draft today. What's up, Davis?
DJ, my man. Welcome back. We did miss you. We didn't think we were going to miss you, but after all was said and done, we did miss you. Congratulations on to you and the fam and your newborn son in addition to the family. How's that been going? Getting any sleep?
Well, my first overall draft pick is still doing well. We like the pick. He is on the top of our board. So we think he's going to come into the organization and compete right away for a starting spot in the family. He's a good character guy, gets his rest. He's agile, flexible. We're really happy with the draft that we had. But mom is good. Sad that she's not going to be a part of the CFL coverage this year as she grooms that draft talent that we have, but we'll definitely be watching as a fan.
Yeah, we saw that. She's not. She's going to take a season off of coverage.
Yeah, instead of babysitting yourself and Milt and Dunnigan, she'll be. I guess it's not babysitting with your own child, but she'll be taking care of a baby for real. But what I'll be doing is, I'm going to be going to Sport Clips, I think, a lot more frequently now, because I'm going to need that shoulder and that neck massage after holding a baby, after playing with it for a while. I'm going to need to get cleaned up. I'm going to need to get that close trim, that blade shave, just because I can't be out here looking any type of way. I'm a father now. I have to look the part. So I think I'm going to be going to Sport Clips. I'm going to go to CFL.ca/waggle. And I'm going to figure out where are the Sport Clips locations near to me. Go to sportclips.ca. I maybe even bring young Desmond with me in the stroller. And when he's ready, he's going to get a cut as well, because I want my baby looking right and tight. They appreciate their clients, and I appreciate that. So I'm going to be, I think, a Sport Clips client more frequently now that I am a father.
Ed Gainey posted something that kind of hit home, and it would surely... coming off of our giving love to our partner Sport Clips, he said it was the first time that his son sat in this past week was the first time his son sat in the barber chair by himself and calmed himself to get a haircut, which I thought was pretty cool. Like he said, I was really proud. And you think about it, imagine, you know how it is. You have to sit, you have to keep your head still, you have to relax and breathe and all those things you need to do to get when you're getting a tight lineup. Well, his son, I guess, had finally reached the age where he was able to sit in the chair on his own and calm. And what Ed said was he was able to calm himself to sit and get that cut, and it made him proud, which would make us all proud, would it not?
100%. I mean, it's yeah. a rite of passage. Cool. Number one, right? It's that experience. We're like, okay, he's got a little bit of autonomy. He's becoming a young man, if you will.
I
everyone says, oh, I just want, happy and healthy, 10 fingers, 10 toes. I don't really care what the gender is, what the sex is. And I was convinced we were having a girl, and I didn't really care. But when I found out I was having a boy, there was a little bit of a fist pump moment for me, because I was already looking forward to going and getting that cut. Am I going to do something a little bit fun and a little drastic? Maybe give him a little mohawk, something that you can pull off when you're a toddler? Or is he going to have the same haircut as his dad? Or maybe he probably has better hair than dad. So, yeah, I'm certainly looking forward to, not yet, because, his baby hairs are going to fall out. But, in a couple months, pulling up to a Sport Clips, making a reservation online, or maybe making a reservation with the app, because efficiency is key as a father. This is what I've learned from you. I'm looking forward to getting that haircut. Maybe I'll get like a CFL logo, in the back of his head.
Nah, don't do that.
Hey, listen, man, this kid needs to pay for himself. So if CFL teams, if you want to sponsor the back of my kid's head, feel free. Maybe like a like an alouette in the back of his head, or like a lion. We will see. Have your people call my people.
I like two of your choices. I like two of your choices at least. Yeah.
Well, did you like their draft. And what we're going to do is we're going to break down our favorite drafts, three teams out of the nine that we really liked what they did on draft day, and more importantly, why, and how what they did last week ties into what they're going to do this year on the field and with their roster. And so I open up the floor to you. Give me your first, not in specific order, but the first that comes to mind, a team that you like what they did on draft day.
You know, the top end of a draft is, especially in the CFL draft, is really what's most important. Because the reality is those first, I would say, four rounds are the guys that are really going to either, you know, have an impact or be a miss. You're not rolling the dice for the back end of the draft. You're kind of just rolling the dice, hoping you get lucky and find someone that can contribute. And if it doesn't work, it's kind of expected, or that's kind of the way it goes to the back end of the CFL draft. So the strange part for me when I looked over the draft, and we heard about how deep of a draft that people thought it was, and especially to my point at the top of the draft, it was pretty deep in a number of positions. When I went through all nine teams and looked at the first, you know, three, four rounds, this is a cop out for real, DJ, but because it was so deep, I felt like every team had a successful draft in the first three, four rounds. And you know, you obviously have to. It's not, I mean, who cares? Who wants to close the book like that? We want to compare who had the best draft, who had the worst draft. And we could talk about some of those things, but as a general statement, you just compare it to last year. Look at every team's third and fourth round picks right now from this year, and then rewind at everyone's third and fourth round picks last year, and just simply our expectations of those guys as we look right now at some of the guys, you know, picked in the third and fourth rounds. I feel like it was so deep that every team walked away feeling pretty good about what they did.
Well, and the draft at the top was so fluid that there are guys who went in the third round who people had in their mocks going in the first round. So that shows you the depth of talent, the depth of guys that were really, really interesting to people, which is why I think a lot of teams feel good about their drafts. Break down for me one team that you really liked.
Well, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Obviously, when you have the fourth and fifth pick of a deep first and second round, you're in a pretty good position. And especially you look at, you know, who could be the first pick and the fifth pick. Those seem to be interchangeable in a lot of people's minds. And that wasn't just look back last year. That was not the case. I think everyone believed Mark Chapman was the first overall pick last year. This year, there was at least there might have been eight guys that could have went number one, and there was probably, you know, a good five guys that people just swap back and forth. When you have four and five, you're sitting pretty good. They go ahead and get Drew Desjarlais with their first pick. That's number four overall, offensive lineman from Windsor. He's going to play guard. He's just a physical guy that's gonna set the tempo in there. He could be when you get a guard who's he's fairly athletic. He's got great size, 6'5", 320, and he's tough. And that's you know, I talked about it during the broadcast of the draft. It's those guys, why does it matter to be tough? We always hear, DJ, oh, he's tough. Well, who cares if somebody's tough? Can they play? Can they move their feet? Can they block the damn quarterback? But the reason why we always talk about tough guys is because, you know, I've been in rooms with the offensive lines, and those groups, if you have a tough guy, a group of tough guys in your offensive line, they're going to play through adversity. They're going to play through injury. They're going to, when things aren't going well, they're going to be physical. And that makes a big difference. If you can add a piece like that, like Drew Desjarlais, who is just flat out tough and athletic, it's a big win. And that's why they went with Drew Desjarlais. And then the next pick, which was right after that, with Jonathan Kongbo, from a talent standpoint, is probably, could be the most talented guy in this draft. He could have been an NFL draft pick strictly on his size. If he came out last year, was healthy, he might have got drafted in the NFL. He's a 6'6", 270-pound guy who can move. He played outside linebacker at times. With a 30 front, he could play outside backer. And you're getting this guy with the fifth pick in the CFL draft. There's just questions about his health. And also a question would be, and this will be for a few guys that we'll talk about later on in the draft, and that also goes for the first overall pick that the Argos took. But if this guy reaches his potential, DJ, is he going to be in the CFL? That's a question I have. But if his talent is through the roof, watch him play in the SEC against a whole lot of number one first round draft picks, and he holds up, and he looks the part. So that's the question I have. But Winnipeg, and then of course following up after that, Brady Oliveira with the second round pick to fill in with Andrew Harris, rotate and possibly be the successor a few years down the road, and Connor Griffiths, who I love from UBC, who can be a starting defensive tackle. And then the kid that's pronounce his name, but it's Eli Tavita. This is, I guess, the story with him. I didn't know anything about him coming into the draft at all. And, Dwayne kind of filled me in, Dwayne Ford, as we went on. But, he's a guy who is basically off the map, out of football, from the University of Hawaii. He'd been out for a year. But when he was playing, he's a center. And when he was playing, he was one of the best offensive linemen, so I've been told, in the NCAA. But just kind of stopped playing football, went back home, and teams couldn't get a hold of him or find him. And that's why he dropped into the fourth round, because people still don't know or not certain that he actually wants to play football. But if he does, if you're talking about a guy who was some had ranked as the best center in all of the NCAA football, and you're getting him in the fourth round, that's just look at those, two, four, five picks right there, the five picks in the first four rounds. You basically have four starters, and then Oliveira, who might be a guy who could be the successor or rotation guy with Andrew Harris. That's why I think Winnipeg, that's my number one team in the draft coming out.
So this is the team we agree on, and the methodology in terms of why we agree is the exact same, and why I love this draft. And basically the way I evaluate drafts are, how many potential starters did you come home with in terms of Canadians? Guys who are going to be good special teams guys and maybe have a long career and be good in the community and good in the locker room, that's great. But you can get those guys. You can get them in free agency. You could get them from undrafted free agents often. There's the chances that a guy in the 8th, 7th, 6th round makes your roster over a guy who isn't drafted at all. At that point, there isn't that much difference. Just one guy got to see his name flash on the CFL tracker. The way I look at these drafts are, how many potential starters from your Canadians, your non-imports, your nationals, did you come home with? And Winnipeg, as you mentioned, they've got, we don't know, but potentially four in the first four rounds. And in Brady Oliveira, they have depth around a place where they have a Canadian starting at a not traditional Canadian position in running back. And so if Harris is down for a couple games or a couple series, then he could potentially be your starter in a stopgap situation, so you don't have to alter your ratio drastically. So I think they got great value at number four with Desjarlais, someone who people wouldn't have been surprised if he went first overall. You mentioned the NFL interest, or potential, I should say, in Kongbo. I like that for two reasons. One, because with the fifth pick, it's like a money ball. It's like a flyer. You have this extra pick in the first round right after your pick in four. If you only have him for a short time, but it's a good time, you're willing to live with that because you're covered in the fact that you had another pick in this draft in that round, someone who doesn't have NFL interest.
Question for you, DJ.
Go ahead.
Do you think they take, to your point right there, do you think they take Jonathan Kongbo with the fifth pick? If that's the only pick they have, forget about Drew Desjarlais, but if they're sitting at the fifth pick and that's the only pick they have in the first round, you still think they take Jonathan Kongbo?
No, I don't. Because no. If you look at the way their board theoretically was set up, and if we're assuming they really liked Brady in the second round as a running back, then you would be talking about your first two picks being people who, in the lifespan of the coach and the GM, may not be starting for you. And in any draft, that's a problem. You want your first two picks to be starters and hopefully impact players. So I do not think they would have been that liberal at five if they didn't have a pick at four and had a very safe pick at four. And someone, based on how the draft played out, gave you really good value at four. And the other thing with Kongbo is, I get, and again, sometimes as a GM or as a coach, You don't want to be drafting someone for the next guy in your job. So players who come through the draft who have NFL interest right away and could have an NFL career right away, and we've seen that over the last couple of years, I get letting them fall a little bit further down your board because if they come to you, by the time they come, you may not be in that spot. So I need someone who I know is going to play right away. So if Kongbo has a great 2, 3, 4 years in the CFL and then goes to the NFL, that's great. We may have won a chip or two in that time, and I'll be like, thank you, son. Go make your money. But I would be more afraid if he was someone who had heavy, heavy NFL interest right now. And because of his injury, I do not think that's the case.
There were some swirling, some rumors going around 24 hours and 48 hours before the draft that Jonathan Kongbo was likely, may not report to camp. Even if someone drafts him, he may not report to camp because he has NFL interest, and he's going to wait until he finishes rehabbing and is healthy. He's going to see what happens in the NFL and take a shot at getting into an NFL camp. Now, that was when I heard that. You always wonder, and there was a whole lot of this going on, and that was part of our conversations, DJ, with the scouting bureau, and how you see guys' names that are not in the top 20, but getting drafted top five in the draft, or just teams basically tanking on with their scouting bureau rankings in order to hide guys. So this to me with Jonathan Kongbo was also something that was maybe just a rumor being put out by somebody, because it's fair when you look at Jonathan Kongbo and what his body type and his potential. He probably, if he gets healthy, he could sit out and wait till August when he's healthy, or September, and guys get hurt at NFL camp and he could slide in there. So it wouldn't be a surprise. And so I reached out to his agent and asked him just that. And they obviously have connections. His agent is Zeke Sandu, who also represents Odell Beckham Jr. Also Danielle Hunter from the Vikings, who also another Pro Bowl guy. So he obviously has connections in National Football League circles, and with Kongbo's body could get him a job. I asked him, is this true? Because this is some of the things I'm hearing. Is it true that Jonathan might sit and wait for an NFL opportunity in August or September and not report to a CFL training camp if somebody drafts him? And he denied it. He said, not a chance. This is not true. Jonathan needs to play football. He's been injured. He's been out. And he will report to whatever team drafts him. So, I mean, to hear, he doesn't have to say that, the agent. He could say, we'll see what happens if he just wants an opportunity. Or he could say all those right things. But he said emphatically, no, Jonathan will report to whatever team that signs him. And that's probably makes the Bombers feel good, because he is a guy who if he did sit out and wait, I believe at some point would get to an NFL camp minimum.
At this time of year, you always wonder who benefits from this information being out there. Is it someone who is hoping that he falls to them, wanting to put a little bit of doubt in the minds of the draft rooms that are ahead of him? Yeah, you got to take everything with a grain of salt at this time of year.
I received another sad story. I received a DM a few weeks ago. Whoever sent me that DM,
it's going down in the DMs. Listening.
Yeah, it's going. Not those type of DMs. Somebody sent me a DM basically saying, "Hey, look, just want to give you some information here. It's on the QT, but Curley Gittens Jr. is being sought after by a bunch of NFL teams. He's likely going to get signed. Just wanted to let you know so you have the information. They're very high on him, and there's a couple teams that are gonna sign him, yada, yada, yada." I wouldn't be surprised. I've seen Curley Gittens Jr.'s film. It's he's pretty darn good, and the numbers would also demonstrated his production, how good he is. But I kind of chuckled at the message, because I said, if I don't know who you are, and I don't this information can't be corroborated by anybody else, so I'm not going to report it or talk about it. But thank you for the information anyway. But obviously it was a hoax, and somebody, not a hoax, but somebody trying to secretly pump someone's stock up or whatever. They may just be a fan of Curly's, but obviously that didn't come to fruition. But there's a lot of that type of stuff going on, to your point, DJ, of teams and people trying to, we call them smoke screens, I guess. But everything came out beneath the clouds on draft day. Who do you? I had Winnipeg. Who did you like? What team had the best draft for you?
I really liked the Montreal Alouettes draft. Stand up, La Belle Province. We have some positive news to talk about your football team.
Yes.
This is why I liked their draft, is because not only did they have two picks in the second round that I think could play for them right away, and Keon Julian Grant and Nate Anderson, the D lineman out of Missouri. They go 13-16 with the the homegrown pick that they got in that second round at the end of it. With 19th, they got Samuel Thomasin, the offensive lineman from Laval. Zach Wilkinson, who I really, really liked out of North Colorado, they got in the third round. So and then Chris Osikusi, they get in the fourth round. So to me, that is five-ish guys who potentially, not right away, but at some point during their CFL careers, could be starters. But you also, when you look at this draft, for me, you have to put Tyler Johnstone in this class. Last year's supplemental draft pick, they forfeit their first-round pick this year to get him. If he's in this draft, he would be an early first-rounder. So I really like the body of work that they've done, and they really, really badly, more so than anybody else, needed an infusion of Canadian talent. And they may not
playmakers too, which they got Canadian playmakers, which,
yes,
to your point, which they added here, and I consider Anderson a playmaker because that's the type of defensive lineman he is. He's not your average Canadian which is usually defensive tackles, obviously. Not including the great Earth Quaku, but everyone else pretty much is an interior guy, and Westerman, of course, but most are interior guys. To your point, Nathan Anderson's outside, speed rusher, so I consider him a playmaker as well.
Well, this is a Don Matthews draft. You get three offensive linemen that you really like, two this year, and then again plus the compensatory pick, and then you've got three guys who make potentially splash plays. And Osikusi and Julian Grant and Nate Anderson, guys who, again, when they're eventually on the field, could be guys who you're watching the game and you're like, is that guy Canadian or is he American? Right? They are not going to look out of place physically. And that's why I like the Alouettes draft.
I like the Ticats draft a lot. And the reason why is they got, again, I think they really got value in Jesse Gibbon as the number two pick. I see Jesse Gibbon as the most athletic offensive lineman in the draft. And when I say athletic, I mean athletic in regards to how his athleticism fits within the scheme of an offensive lineman ready to play. So he might not be the fastest or jump the highest in his athleticism, but if you watch him in space when he's pulling, when he's engaging, when he's striking, he's always got his feet underneath him. He's always got great balance. He has great feet. I saw clips in which he was a pulling guard, and he was crossing over his feet while pulling and still keeping his feet under him. I mean, which is, it's hard for a 5'9", 180-pound guy to do that. Jesse Gibbon has great feet. He's gonna be a guy who can play a long, long time strictly because of his athleticism. And just as importantly, DJ, teams are making their own territorial picks. And Jesse Gibbon, he's from the Hamilton area. And the reason why is because you want to get guys when they're in their second contracts and when they're at their best, when they become all-stars. You want to be able to keep them. And if you can get a player, have a career in your hometown and transfer – and transfer your football stuff into life after football, then that's a win-win. So getting Jesse Gibbon, who could be a 10-year guy, can be an all-star, can anchor that offensive line, that's a great pick. And then the 10th overall pick, which I think surprised a whole lot of people. It didn't surprise me because when I watched his film, I was amazed. Him and Matthew Betts had the best film of anybody in the draft, and that was Nikola Kalinic, the tight end slash fullback slash receiver from York. I mean, this guy is, he's going to be a teamer, but he's also, a very, very good teamer, but he also, I think, can be, a Patrick Lavoie type of guy, come in as a tight end, as a fullback. And he's just a mismatch. If he's, he can run routes, he can block, he's tough. I love that pick at 10. And then David Unger which is he's a little slot back wide receiver from Idaho. He also returns kicks. He's a good little player. I saw him take a punt back for a touchdown. I saw him make a lot of catches in the slot. He has some connection with June Jones. I believe June Jones either coached his dad or coached with his dad. They really liked him for probably a number of reasons. And then Malik Irons, who many thought was the best running back in the draft. They got get him at 22. And then all of a sudden, you see Alex Green get cut or released the next day. Looks like they're going to go All-Canadian at running back. They just flopped their ratio now with that pick. With that pick, they knew what they were doing. They have Sean Thomas Erlington and now Malik Irons. They have two Canadian backs. They're going Winnipeg style and going to go Canadian at running back. So you look at what they got. They got Jesse Gibbon, Kalenic Unger, and now they flopped their ratio, putting Malik Irons in there at running back to go two Canadians at running back.
Yeah, see, I'm not as enthused with their draft because I look at that group and I'm like, Jesse Gibbon is the only clear starter for me. Kalenic is a nice package guy, but he's always going to be limited to the amount of plays he's on the field. Unger is a nice player, but Canadian wide receiver was not, to me, a need for them. The guy
not at all. Not, it's more Chambers. Than not a need.
It's a strength.
Yeah.
That's right. So, yeah. I mean, you at some point, it's diminishing returns, and that's not even, you know, factoring in if Chapman plays for them in the next couple years. And then, okay, you want to go Canadian running backs with Sean Thomas Erlington and Malik Irons, and you want to do the basically Winnipeg East thing, but none of those guys are Andrew Harris. So, I mean, you could have a Canadian running back to have one, but unless he's an elite player, what's the point? So
they believe those two guys together can be elite. And I believe when you go running back by committee, now, and especially here's how I see it, DJ, and especially in June Jones' offense, he's not gonna run the ball over and over. He's gonna use those backs and you know swing passes, screens, that run and shoot style offense. They don't need a guy that's gonna run the ball 25 times a game. They just flopped the ratio. They also, another, you know what else is put a star beside this move too is releasing. And I say star, I don't mean it's a great move, but it's telling you something. And that's when they released Justin Capricotti. They released Alex Green and Justin Capricotti. That's telling you that's a ratio releases right there. Capricotti was making decent money, and now when you lease Alex Green, it's because you're going now Canadian at tailback. And also, you're now going to go at defensive end. Now you're not stuck with having to play. You can play whoever you want on defense. Now I think with the ratio now, they're going to be set defensively to go wherever they want to go. They got Tunde Adeleke as well. They can go wherever they want to go on defense ratio wise.
Yeah, I mean that's a good point and it's a good way to think through it. I just think
you're. But I hear you. Punting
on the
right?
You're punting on the running back position. You're saying, well, what is the difference that great between these guys? No. So why don't we just put a Canadian there and then have an American at an impact position potentially on defense? I suppose I hear that, but I still think to pick a Canadian running back 22nd overall is pretty early, unless he's going to be Andrew Harris, right? And that's why I was not as impressed with what Hamilton did in the draft. I still need to see more because I don't know if there are enough starters there, impact starters, out of the Canadians that they drafted to make me impressed. Speaking of ratio, though, I was really impressed with what the Riders did. And maybe I'm being hypocritical because I don't know how many starters they got out of their draft. But I think they addressed the ratio because their first two picks were wide receivers, totally different styles. Justin McInnes, the Arkansas State, this guy who's going to get in and out of his breaks. Braden Linus Dickey out of New Mexico, a guy who is going to run you over on the way to getting to his route and going to be a factor in the run game as well. I like that because long gone are the days where they had the great Canadian Air Force and they had a bunch of Canadian receivers making big plays for them and helping them with their ratio. Can you name an impact Canadian receiver on the Riders? I like the fact that they said, listen, this is a receiving core in this draft that is pretty good. We're not necessarily sure if we're going to get as many good receivers coming out of the pipeline in the next couple of years. This is an express need for us. We're going to address it head on, and that's why I like what they did with their draft.
I like Edmonton because they got who I think is the best player in the draft, and that's Matthew Betts. Matthew Betts, to me, if you know, it's a risk. Obviously, he's got a contract, so which is not the same. To be clear, it's not the same as everyone else. He doesn't have a camp invite. He's going to be at main training camp with the Bears. He also had other opportunities in the NFL. Other teams were interested in signing him. So if he doesn't make the Bears team, there's still a chance that in which that's going to happen at the end of August, beginning of September, he'll find that out. If he doesn't make that team, there's still a chance another team picks him up off waivers. So that's a risk, but because he's such a talent, I think you take that chance. So I really do like that pick. And then Kyle Saxlid. Saxlid, to me, you know, you get Kyle Saxlid with the 12th pick because he's strictly a tackle. If he ends up being a tackle for you, a starting tackle at some point in time, you win. Because with the 12th pick, there's no other tackles in this draft, at least that are pure tackles. There's guys that can possibly, you know, they might play tackle, they might play guard, but Kyle Saxlid is strictly a tackle. That's a Chris Van Zyl type guy, and if he ends up playing tackle for you, you win. So, you know, 3 years down the road from now, you somehow get Matthew Betts back, and you got Kyle Saxlid playing tackle. Those are two ratio breakers, not Canadian starters, ratio breakers, a whole different deal, which we've talked about before. And then Shai Ross is a guy I liked a lot as well. This receiver from Manitoba started playing football late. He's one of the guys that's got some dog in him. He's super quick, athletic. I think he's only been playing football for 4 or 5 years, so he's got a lot of room to grow. We'll see what happens. He got an invite to the New York Giants minicamp, so they obviously saw something they liked in him. We'll see what happens with Shai Ross, but that's the reason I like those guys. Also, Hunter Carl from Calgary, that receiver who is a guy who is, you know, he's pro ready. He can run routes. He got good hands. He's a guy also that is a contributor. You pick him up in the 7th round, and Evan Marchabrota in the 5th round, the defensive tackle who is a big fella plugger and also can be a rotation guy for you. So that's why I like the Esks, mostly because of those top two guys. Yes, the Eskimos in general is boom or bust. What they're doing right now, Brock Sunderland, Jason Moss, going out and signing Trevor Harris, that's a boom or bust move. If it works out, great. They paid him a boatload. If it works out, great. Signing Matthew Betts with a 3rd overall pick. If he ends up staying in Chicago, that's a bust. If he ends up having a long career and getting back here, that's a great move. So to me, the Eskimos, their moves with Brock Sunderland and with Jason Moss, it's boom or bust on Trevor Harris and it's boom or bust on Matthew Betts.
Yeah, I really like their draft because, you know, their first two picks, impact guys, as you mentioned. But then when you go into the later rounds, Ross, 40th overall, is a nice pick. In that 5th round, they also get the D lineman, Evan Marchabrota, out of Saskatchewan with the next pick. He's a guy who I think eventually could play for them. Scott Hutter, DB out of Laurier in the 6th round. And then you mentioned Hunter Carl, the wide receiver out of Calgary, in the 7th. We're now in the 7th round, and they've got guys who are going to be CFL players. Now, they may have to go back to school for a year and apprentice, and then we may be seeing them fighting for a roster spot, you know, a season from now. They've got a bunch of guys who I really, really like who are going to be special teamers right away and you know, toward the end of their first contracts could be pushing for a starting spot or even just a impact kind of dress roster guy that you could play in sub packages. So I love the depth that they've got in their draft. A team we did not mention was the BC Lions. And their draft was all right, but they made news not for what they did in the draft, but what they did or did not do, I suppose, in free agency. There are some quotes that came out of Vancouver, both by Solomon Illuminian and his agent about, you know, what was expected from BC. And Illuminian had a wrist injury that limited him to just 4 games last season. So when we saw them in free agency making all of these expensive moves, we kind of talked about it and you alluded to it. There would have to be a pay cut that would have to go down for him to stay in BC, or he just he wasn't going to be there. It push comes to shove, it wasn't going to make sense. He said to Sportsnet 650 Radio in Vancouver, "I thought I was in the plans. I'll just leave it at that. That's why I extended. You'll have to ask Ed. I'm not here to bash anybody. I talked to Ed and he said I wasn't in the plans. I said I appreciate it and go ahead and release me and let me move on with my career." And that's how we got here. His agent, Barty Germani, said to also to Sportsnet 650, "I just think if you knew, I know from sources that he was intending on releasing him and he being Ed Hervey, period, at all this year. He shouldn't have done it before free agency and given Solomon an opportunity to go and have a fair chance to get wages he deserves. Not a couple weeks before camp and then say we're above salary cap. If you knew you were going to go above salary cap, maybe you don't sign a couple people and keep Solomon and your promise to him. It's all around shady business." And so for more background, remember, these are two guys, Bardia and Ed, who, let's just say, did not see the Jonathan Jennings situation the same. Jennings is also one of his clients, and they were trading shots back and forth in the media because of that. I wonder how much of that ill will spilled into these negotiations. But when you consider the fact that basically they're claiming that he had a deal with Wally Buono, that, listen, we're going to give you another year, and we're going to reduce your contract from 225 to 200 in that last year, but we'll give you another year on the back end. And Solomon did it in good faith because Wally Buono was a man of his word. And now Eddie, who was abreast of that situation, is not living up to that deal, and specifically not doing it before free agency, where if Solomon Elamanian's name and resume was out there, you'd think he would garner some interest.
So Bardia did accuse Lions GM Ed Hervey of what he called shady business. And basically, this is the quote that we wanted to find out about. So I asked Ed about this quote right here. This is the agent talking. "If you knew you were going to go above the salary cap, maybe you don't sign a couple people and you keep Solomon and the promise to him. It's all around shady business." Now, what the agent is saying is that he had promised Solly, if he took a pay cut in the 2018 season, that he would keep him around for the 2019 season. So I point blank asked Ed Hervey about this, and Ed completely denied it. Quote, "There was never any promises made to Solly about returning for the 2019 season. Yes, we would have liked him back, but there were never any promises made." This was a quote from Ed Hervey, and Ed's whole thing was, and a lot of people question, and including us, we wonder why the timing of this. Why not a veteran like Solomon Elamimian? Why not give him the courtesy of releasing him early on in the offseason to give him a chance? If you knew that was in your plans, give him a chance to get on with another team instead of 2 weeks before training camp. Ed Hervey said this, "Solly knows this. We were trying to find ways to keep him. And so this is why the timing of it happened so late. They were trying to find ways to keep him." Ed went on to say, "I like Solly and we wanted to have him around." The next reason he said for the timing was there was lukewarm interest in a trade that likely would have helped us move up in the draft. When exhausting all those opportunities of possibly trading Solly and moving up in the draft, that went right down to the wire. So Ed said there was lukewarm interest in that, and it came down into the final hours before they could not get a trade done. When you look at these quotes from Ed, it makes more sense as to why it happened the way it did. And you know, and I continue to speak with Ed about it, and he had nothing but good things to say about Solly and wanting to be able to make things happen. And it seemed as though Solly understood the process as it went on. And maybe Solly's understanding and the agent's understanding might have differed a bit. Those were Ed's comments. The reason for the timing of this, number one, is they were trying to find ways, whether it was people taking pay cuts, whatever it was, they were trying to find ways to keep Solly around. And number two, there was interest from other teams within the draft that were willing, possibly, like Ed said, lukewarm interest in trading some of their picks, possibly coupled with Solly, for the Lions to move up in the draft.
The one thing I will say, and we've had, me and you have had conversations about this, is a guy with a great career, the all-time leading tackler for the BC Lions. He's the only defensive player ever to win the most outstanding player in this league. He's a teammate of mine. I was with him when he was a rookie. I saw greatness then. I won a Grey Cup with Solly. Solly's a great, great player. He's not just a guy that played for the BC Lions. He's their all-time leading tackler. You think historically all the great linebackers have come through there. He's their all-time leading tackler, and he plays every snap like it's his last. And so, yes, you would like him to be treated better. You would like him to go out. You know, he deserves to go out better than this 2 weeks before training camp being released. And so I would hope that the organization could find a way to either make this decision earlier, which is tough. It's tough. Maybe they were trying to trade him. Maybe they were more likely trying to find ways to wiggle around the cap or to get him to take a pay cut, something in order to keep him. You know, it's sad that it had to end this way, which it often does. You look at two of the best players over the last decade for the Lions, Manny Arsenault and Solomon Elamimian. And we had Manny on our show a few months ago, and he was salty. Go back into the archives and listen to the Manny Arsenault interview with us about how his legacy in BC and leaving BC. He's salty. So you don't want, like, these are two of the best players ever to play for this team, or two guys who have been mainstays on a pretty good team over the last 10 years. And they're both leaving in a way that no one wants it to happen. But that's what seems to happen in pro sports. And it's sad, but, you know, what other than giving him more time, which I think for Solly you could do, you know, giving him, you know, cutting him earlier so he could have an opportunity to get what his maximum value on the open market. You said this, DJ, off air. Why it could be worse. You could bring him to training camp. It doesn't cost anything to bring him to training camp. You could bring him to training camp and cut him then.
Yep. Yeah, it certainly could be worse, but you mentioned the fact that Manny
certainly could be better.
Yeah, definitely. Manny left town with a similar misunderstanding, if you will, with the front office. Now Solomon, we obviously know that Jonathan Jennings' ending was not pretty. And the difference, though, with Solly is he's not just an all-time BC Lions player. He's an all-time player. This is a guy who, for me, is a Hall of Famer. First defensive player to be named MOP in 2014, most outstanding rookie in 2010, defensive player, most outstanding award in 2014, 2016, and he wins that Grey Cup ring in 2011, which you mentioned. It's not a great look. The optics of it aren't good when it happens, you know, in the beginning of May, and we're hearing about the back channels from him and his agent on the radio. If it was done in free agency, everyone say, listen, new guy at the top, going in a different direction. Solomon Elamimian goes on our board of eligible free agents that may sign somewhere, and we're tracking that and having that conversation. And at 32 years old, maybe there aren't a lot of options, but there would certainly be more options than there are now after free agency is pretty much done and after the draft.
But I would say this to end it. His agent, Bardia, he's talking about that it's they didn't do it right. It's shady business was the quote that he... releasing Solly this close to training camp is shady business. Well, I will say this to the agent. If you don't want your player to be released 2 weeks before training camp, put something in the contract that you drew up, that you had him sign. Put something in that contract that gives him an off-season bonus in January or February, so you're not waiting until May to have this decision made. That's on you guys. That's on you for drawing up this contract and leaving your player vulnerable. In my contracts, when you're in a position of strength, DJ, when you're in a position of strength, you decide, you dictate the terms of the contract, and you put that signing bonus, and you put off-season money in early in the off-season, January, February. That way you and your family know once they commit this percentage of your salary in the off-season, they cannot release you, or it makes it very difficult to release you. That's on the agent to get that done.
So the two rumored teams that are in on him, Hamilton, and given the defensive talent that they've lost in the offseason, that makes sense. But the one that's really has people's interest is Saskatchewan. And man, I would love running out of the tunnel, playing BC, Solomon and Manny. You couldn't write a better script. So I'm selfishly, because I love storylines and I love drama and I love anything that's messy, I'm hoping that he goes to the writers. And when he does sign with wherever he ends up landing, I hope he comes on the podcast to talk about it. And we could kind of work through all of this and what was said and what wasn't said. I think, unlike Manny, he probably will keep his cards a little bit closer to the vest, but the onus is on us as journalists to get some juicy information. I thank you and I thank Marshall for carrying the podcast while I was gone. This was a fun one. Can't wait to do it next week.
Thanks, DJ. Have some fun with the family and relax, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we out.